All right, thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. It's our pleasure to welcome to the show author David J. Fletcher. He's here to talk about Dick Allen. And Richie Allen, of course, up for Hall of Fame induction from the classic era. Anyway, David has written a book called Chili Dog MVP, called Dick Allen and the 72 White Sox and a transforming Chicago. David, welcome to the show. And I know this is personal for you. You think that your man Dick Allen should be in the Hall of Fame, don't you?
Yes, I do. Thanks for having me on this morning. Dick missed getting inducted in 2014 and 2021 by one vote. We're hoping this third time is the charm. His statistics say it all. He's the best offensive player in the era for over 11 years. He had the highest OPS plus percentage, more than all the other big superstars, Hank Aaron, Stargell, Mays, Mantle, everyone. He was the best. And also his runs created plus statistic, which is a statistic about how many runs a player created for his team. He was a career 155, which is 18th all-time in MLB history. Again, the stats can't lie, and I really believe it's time, and he has some special circumstances that really deserve to be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I know it must be gutting for you the last two times to miss out on one vote each time. I actually know this eight-member committee, Glenn Schwartz and Susan Slusser. I know them. You want me to put in a word for you?
I'd love that. I love that.
Well, why is he overlooked? Is it because he played on a lousy team so long? I mean, is that kind of it?
Well, I think a lot of it, you know, Bill James didn't do him any favors. And I actually got to meet Bill James a couple years ago and gave him a copy of my book. He said, you need to read this and really find out about Dick Allen, what kind of person he really was. He got labeled as sort of a miscontent, a rebel, and he just was ahead of his times. He was a very proud African-American man who grew up in western Pennsylvania, Wampum, which was a very integrated type of community where there's a lot of tolerance. And then the Phillies in 1963 sent him down to Little Rock for AAA, and that was the experience of a lifetime where he experienced all the racial intolerance. It was there right after the Little Rock Nine with the governor there in Arkansas. And it just is a whole experience that he had. Philadelphia was the last team to integrate black players into their team. And so he just had a very difficult environment. I mean, even though he was the rookie of the year in 64 and the Phillies collapsed the last six and a half games of the season, and he was just loved by the fans, he started becoming labeled as a malcontent, and it was really a title he did not deserve.
Well, let me ask you this, because I remember in junior high, I'm an Oakland guy. He came over to the A's, and the A's played a doubleheader, and he had a pretty good, I think he played in both games, did pretty well, and then he left. What he never came back. What happened there? Do you know?
Well, I know exactly what happened. First of all, when you saw him in Oakland, he was wearing number 60 instead of his normal 15. That was in honor of his class of 1960 at Wampum High School. And he actually had Wampum for the name on the back of the jersey. He had a big clash, like a lot of players did, with Charlie Finley. He didn't want a DH. He felt that a DH was being less of a player. And so they basically ended up having a big fight. And ironically, his last game ever was in June of 77, was at Comiskey Park. And he had a big blow-up with Charlie Finley. He tried to come back in 78. It didn't happen. And he thought about doing some ball in Japan, and he decided to do his real first love, which was the horses.
What was the feud with Ron Santo, who I know a lot of Chicago fans think Ron Santo should be in the Hall of Fame and is a saint, but what did they have a beef?
Yeah, they did. You know, Ron Santo got inducted back in 2012. He was got inducted because of the Veterans Committee voted him in. He and Dick got in a fight because Santo just did not really like his role on the White Sox. He got traded. He was in 73 by Roland Heeman from the Cubs to the White Sox. He actually refused a trade to the Angels. He didn't like having to play second base, didn't like the DH. And so he was riding George Ora, a player that Dick sort of mentored. And they basically had a fight about that. And basically Dick did not like how that he didn't feel that Santa was really putting the effort out for the team in 74. Ironically, both of them left the White Sox after 74 and left big money on the table to not play in 75.
Speaking with David J. Fletcher, author of Chili Dog MVP, a couple more questions here for David. The other thing I remember about Richie Allen, Dick Allen, whatever you like, is that he kind of had that sort of Mantle-esque Brian Downing type of body. And before the juice ball era, he was one of those guys that would like hit it out of the stadium, right?
Right. His power was the top five ever in MLB history. Mantle and Ruth, they were pretty much on his, to compare. I mean, he used to hit roof shots at Comiskey Park, hit him at Tiger Stadium, hit him at County Mac Stadium. I mean, his power is just unbelievable. And the most famous home run that he ever hit, besides the famous Chili Dog home run, was the one he hit in the center field bleachers that almost Harry Carey caught in August 1972. But just tremendous power.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Chili Dog and Vec and all the crazy stuff going on back then.
Well, it was a different era. The White Sox were going to leave town. 106 losses in 1970, very few fans. They were going to leave. And in December 71, Roland Heeman traded Tommy John to the Dodgers for Dick Allen. He was a holdout during spring training, which was the first Major League Baseball strike. He signed right when the strike was getting settled, and he basically transformed Chicago. He was Michael Jordan in Chicago before Michael Jordan. He transformed the fan base. The fans came back. They drew 1.3 million fans. They almost won the American League West. If Bill Melton hadn't had a fall off his ladder and over the winter and get a herniated disc, he was a home run king in 71. The White Sox would have won the American League West. They were the second best team in the American League that year.
You know, I think about the rep a player can get as clubhouse poison or whatever, and yet you got guys like Goose, who wrote, I know, a foreword here. He said the best player he ever saw in his life. Orlando Cepeda, who I had the pleasure of knowing, he was very complimentary. And then, like, you look at his skippers, like Chuck Tanner. Chuck Tanner was like your grandfather. He said that he was a great, great guy to have on the team. And then Gene Mock, a complete opposite, you know, just the biggest red ass ever. He also said Dick Allen never caused any problems. Why do you think he got that rep then?
Well, I think some of that was because of his fight with the white Frank Thomas in 65, which he actually became friends the rest of their lives, just because he didn't like the fact with the Phillies, missing ball games. And in 69, he was doing all the scratching on the first base side of, in the dirt, putting things like, boo, I can't wait to leave. It was just because it was a different era. There was no free agency. And he was a person who believed in his own independence. He certainly was someone who did not like to be told what to do, but he was a great teammate, and he actually had tremendous leadership skills and helped mentor younger players. I heard that from so many of his teammates that I interviewed for the book.
As time goes by, obviously, these names start slipping away from our minds. And, you know, I'm 59 and I barely remember him. I was, like I said, I was like in the fourth and fifth grade when he was doing really, really well. And so it's important to talk about him. But do you think also he could get a push kind of like Andre Dawson did, where once we got into the roids and everything, people looked at Andre Dawson and the Hawk and said, oh, wait, he had all these numbers clean. Well, then let's put him in. Well, we know we could say that about Dick Allen, right?
Right. Well, he had tremendous numbers. I mean, again, his OPS plus, for 10 years from 1964 to 1972, we led the major leagues. I mean, those numbers were there way before the steroid era, and you can't take it away. The prodigious power he had, but he hit in the clutch, and he was also a tremendous base runner. That's the thing I remember the most as a high school kid watching him play, and that's kind of why I became enamored with him. He just was a total player. People kind of got on him about his defense. He wasn't the best third baseman, but he was a very capable first baseman with the White Sox, and he just had an aura about himself. And again, he had a charisma that was special. You know, again, I use the phrase, use Michael Jordan before Michael Jordan in Chicago.
Does he ever have any run-ins with Hawk Harrelson? Just about everybody did.
Well, Hawk Harrelson, you know, was on the Indians, and then we started the golf tour when when Dick was the White Sox. But Hawk ended up hiring Dick when Hawk was the general manager of the White Sox in 1986. So obviously they had a very good relationship. I talked to Hawk last year a lot about Dick because he wanted Dick's son's Doobie's phone number to talk to him about his dad. So they had a great relationship.
Phillies retired 15, but White Sox didn't. I guess not enough years there.
Well, that's correct. Hopefully it'll change. One of the things that the Phillies really did a great job. I went to that retirement ceremony. I was the only one from Chicago that Dick wanted me there to be there. That was 3 months before he died. And it was really a fantastic gesture on the part of John Middleton, their owner. And it really talked about the civil rights aspect, that basically Dick was sort of a John Lewis of baseball, what he did as a pioneer. And he never had any bitterness over the years. That's the thing I really enjoyed about him. He's a very complex human being. But despite all the slings and arrows he suffered, and racial intolerance, and you know, some people making up stuff about him, he didn't hold a grudge. And he knew that his stats made him a Hall of Famer. He never campaigned for it. It's sad he won't be alive to see it happen. Hopefully it's going to happen on December 8th.
I was talking to this kid in his 20s. He saw a picture of the White Sox wearing red hats and red pinstripes, looking like the Phillies. He's like, is this real? I'm like, that's not even the worst of it. They used to wear Bermuda shorts.
Well, that was in 77. It wasn't in 72. Yeah.
All right. The book is called Chili Dog MVP, Dick Allen, the 72 White Sox and a Transforming Chicago, by our guest, David J. Fletcher. David, let's get him into the Hall of Fame. He deserves it. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks, Rick. Thanks very much. I'm a Berkeley grad, so good to talk to an Oakland guy. See ya.
Hey, how about the big game? Go Bears.
That's right. All right. I was there with the band game, so see ya.